This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by some gentlemen from the water treatment plant here in Buffalo. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, you?
Good.
Good. So I'd like to introduce you, first of all, Travis Green and Terry Tucker. You're both water plant operators here, and Kevin Silvernagle, you're Director of Public Works for the City of Buffalo. And thank you for coming and spending some time. I've been wanting to talk about our water treatment plant for a while. It's obviously, water is an absolutely vital, crucial, and essential commodity for literally our very survival. And purity of water, the safety of our water, but also availability, instant availability of water are two things that we just expect. But to get to those points, there's a lot of processing, literally. And I hope if we could just spend a moment to explain to listeners what actually happens. You took me on a great tour of the plant, and I have a much better understanding of how it works. But the water here that we receive in Johnson County, up here in Buffalo, is literally we're the first port of call for that water. Nobody else is drawing the water so far upstream as we are here. So the water is coming off the mountain and it is collecting in the Taihak reservoir, as you described, and then it comes through a series of processes through the water treatment plant. Travis,
yeah,
maybe you'd
that's correct.
Just,
yeah,
just we're briefly a, describe to us.
We're a surface water treatment plant, Clear Creek, and so that in itself, right there, it's pretty good. Clear Creek, you know, that's our source water, and we're very fortunate that we get to be the first users, and we have a very clean supply of drinking water. But with surface water comes a lot of challenges, and in this plant, you know, with the weather, we're just like any of the farmers and ranchers. We keep our eye on the clouds and what it's going to do to our creek.
So contaminants are basically your enemy. That's really what you are working with, and all the time. And what you described to me earlier is that essentially that's dirt. And that comes in various forms, but within that dirt are all the organisms and bacteria and microbes and so on that you don't want in your, especially your potable water, your drinking water. And so you are going through this process of cleansing and treating the water.
That's correct.
I think you described to me 5 or 6 different forms of treatment, which include a coagulant, which basically sucks that out.
We gather the dirt together to make it bigger so it's easier to pull out of the water.
But then you also have to remove that coagulant.
You take that back out.
You take that back out, so there's a process there. You also use your own chlorine. You create your own chlorine, and you're using that too. And then there's a fairly sophisticated set of other water filtration systems.
Correct. Yeah, we do. We use, here we have microfiltration as our end product, but we do a DAF treatment, diffused air flotation. We get 90% of the particulates and the dirt out of the water there, and then put it through a filter, sodium hypochlorite, which is basically bleach that we generate on site, is the final step in that. You know, that's kind of an insurance policy in the disinfectant of the water.
And all of this happens under pretty intense regulation. You described to me that every 4 hours, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which is our federal agency, requires you to sample the water and record it and send them the results.
That's correct. So we quantify that as turbidity, which is basically what the clarity of the water is, suspended particles in your water. And, you know, if you got a lot of dirt in your water, then there's more chance for something to be there. And a minimum chlorine residual, and that's reported every 4 hours.
And the EPA requires pretty fastidious standards of safety. But one thing is not required is taste, what you describe as taste
and
odor.
Yeah, taste and odor.
That's one of those
industry
terms, taste and odor. But that is something that
we all like different tastes and odors, I guess.
Yeah, so maybe you'd explain how the taste and odor of a water can still, how can it have a specific or maybe unpleasant taste or odor to somebody, but is still safe?
Well, I guess you know, we have measurements of safety of water, you know, the chlorine residual, the treatment process that we go through, the turbidity. So we understand and quantify those with our instrumentation, to where somebody that, you know, you drink well water, you live out in the county and you drink your well water, and then you come to town and you're like, well, I don't think this water tastes very good, because you probably taste the chlorine or that smell. So we all have different tastes and odor senses, you know, and things that we like. So the taste and the odor is, you know, I guess it's individually, you know, everybody's different.
And is there a seasonality associated with that? And one of the things you described to me earlier was the challenge of the conditions, whether it's the season or the weather, and both have an impact. So if, you know, with the winter, as we get to the spring months, and there's the creeks are filling up and everything's being washed down, and you have more literal debris and dirt in your water system, that actually has an effect too. You're working harder to remove those contaminants.
Well, it just happens. So with our taste and odor, what we see is in the spring and the runoff and the turnover of lakes, and lakes naturally turn over, and all the dead organisms that over the winter and the leaves and all the organics, once the temperature reaches 40 degrees in the water, all mixes together. Then the lakes, we call that turnover. And so we have ponds at our water treatment plant that do that. And as you know, it's warmer down here earlier than it is at Tyhack. Tyhack would be our next one. So we do that. Sometimes that's compounded twice with the taste and the odor. You know, the dead organisms are mixed into the water at that point. And then also we have our runoff in our creek. You know, the water starts getting dirty and brown, so it's pulling in all the leaves and all the dead stuff from the years prior. And it's just the natural cycle, you know, of our dying and reproducing, and then the spring of the life again and everything. And it's just the natural process. So with the taste and odor, you know, it's a musty, and I'm sure you've been around that, and you smell it or you taste it. We don't have any taste and odor treatment process in our plant. We deal with it through a short period of time generally. So it's not a treatment process that we have, you know, is the taste and odor. And there is processes for that. It's very complicated, and another process that we just don't deal with that very often. You know, it's usually in the spring and the fall with the organics in the water. So,
but nonetheless,
any of that, you know, the taste and odor, and you know if something's rotten or if something's bad. And so it's a valid question. I think it's great, because people realize most of the time you taste your water, it's pretty good. So we are fortunate. Like I say, we have very good, we have clean, and we have a nice process and a nice water plant to take care of the safety of the water. And like I say, we don't have any way to help your senses of the taste and odor, other than we know that the water is safe, and we, you know, we're on top of the safety of the drinking water.
So water cannot flow down into neighborhoods, down into town, without it passing those rigorous safety tests.
Correct.
And yet, the taste and odor can be different. And I think intuitively, it makes you wonder, how can it be safe but still taste off?
Well, I guess, you know, I go to somewhere out of town and I taste their water and I think, well, this doesn't taste right, or this tastes slimy, or you take showers that are, you know, and you can't get that, you feel that on your skin, you know. There's just different water, you know, everywhere we go in the world. And so with the process of our filtration and chlorination, we can assure that it's safe to drink.
Okay, so it is rigorously tested, consistently, it goes through
So one of us is here, we're here 365 days a year, we're tied to it with a SCADA system, you know, an instrumentation that will notify us if something's out of line. We do a lab, you know, 365 days a year. Somebody comes in here, if we're producing water, which we always do through our distribution system, one of us is responsible and make sure that...
And you showed me what appears to be an extremely sophisticated digital setup.
That's that SCADA.
Yes, yeah. Which is constantly measuring and assessing not only the water flow, but what's in the water, how well the filtering systems are working. I'm talking in very lay terms here, but there are a number of checks and balances. You're not just sticking a chlorine stick in a cup of water from time to time and saying this is good enough.
It's a rigorous system.
So one of the other issues, Kevin, and this is something I know that you've been battling with, is broken pipes. And if water is leaving here in town, leaving the water treatment plant in the same condition, it may be tasting slightly different in town, and that may be because the pipes may be different. Is that correct?
That I suppose has a small effect on it, but for the most part, that shouldn't affect the taste of the water. Some pipes are ductile iron, cast iron, and then PVC, poly, some copper lines, and that doesn't really affect the taste of the water. It's pretty minimal. And we're in a constant state of monitoring our water line system and working towards repairing the aging lines, all the time.
And one of the things we're currently in the middle of, the city is undertaking a update of all the water metering, and that's partly, as you explained to me earlier, is the efficiency of knowing that whether there is a leak, that you can tell pretty quickly if water use is electronic, and so you can not only more efficiently send out bills and charge people for the water use, but also you can tell more efficiently if there seem to be breaks or leaks
and
loss
see stuff
of water
in real time. It's just helping us update.
Okay. What are the biggest challenges that you guys face on a daily basis? There's obviously a lot of seasonality.
Yeah, Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
just for our source water, we're the same as, the farmers and ranchers. We rely heavily on what Mother Nature does or doesn't do to us, and then, we react accordingly and try and foresee that, but nobody,
And water is becoming a more precious commodity across the globe. We are fortunate that we are literally close to the source here. Do you ever see a situation where we could run out of water?
In our book, no, that can't happen, because we have to provide, we all not only provide drinking water, it's fire protection throughout our town. We need to have, our water is our most viable thing. We're doing a well project, and I think that's going forward. And, we're very proactive, as much as we can. Tyhack Reservoir was put in, so that if we ever got down to where the water wasn't there, then we had a storage. We work on source water protection plan. You see the burning on the mountain, and stuff like that. We're one of the biggest conservers of water. What we put through our drinking water plant, we also collect, and we put back into the Clear Creek drainage. A lot of people don't see that. It goes on down, but our streets and our infrastructures also gather water and bring to Clear Creek. The water that we bring in, we're very conservative with, I guess. And other than people watering their yards, in the wintertime we see it. What we put through our town goes back to our creek. And then also props to our guys on the other end of town. They put it back and they're held to a standard, to go back. Somebody else down the line is going to use that water, and that's back to where we started. We're very fortunate. We're the first users of this, beautiful water that we have.
So the water that you are cleaning, the byproducts from that, and that's what you just described, and it goes back into Clear Creek. Does it go back in a contaminated, or is that harmful?
No, that's what I'm saying. That we have wastewater operators, and that's their pat on their back. They do a very good job of cleaning the water that we use, and they're also held to a standard to where they can't just, we're not just dumping our sewer into the creeks, and that's what people understand, more so than we used to. We all gain more understanding of what we need to do to protect our environments, and they have a very, very sophisticated wastewater treatment plant.
So capacity is a big issue. What sort of capacity are you running? Are we at 25% of what we could be using? Are we at 50%? Are we at almost 100%, it's plentiful?
As far as our source water?
Yes.
And then back to Mother Nature again. It depends, you know, on those years. We've had dry years. Last year we had a very wet year. You know, we had people didn't need to water their yards, or people didn't need to, you know, use the water. And that's something that's going to always be changing, you know, year to year. With the well fields and our source water and our water rights, I don't see us running out. Like I say, that's just not in our vocabulary here to be out of water.
So, Kevin, can you describe to listeners what the well fields, what the purpose of the project is?
So the wells were originally, the design was for emergency water supply as part of it, so, and supplement to the water plant. So in this situation, where we have the high turbidity, the runoff times of the year, that well water could also be used, blended with some of the creek water, to help us get through these rough times.
Could be beneficial to our taste and odor, you know. Yeah. When our ponds turn over, when our creek gets muddy, then that's another source, because Mother Nature cleans herself, and then we use, you know, the well water or a blend of well water in our times. We could avoid, so that's something we're always looking at, is where is our best source of water, and how can we protect that? And so with the wells, they will do... That will be beneficial to any kind of taste and odor, you know, if when they're used.
So we've talked quite a bit about removing harmful contaminants of all sorts of different varieties that may not be good for us as humans. Do you add anything to the water that people are drinking out of their tap?
We add sodium hypochlorite, which is our disinfectant. It's a chlorine. That's the chlorine. That's the bleach smell you smell. We generate that here at the plant. It's salt water and electricity, sodium hypochlorite, and also we put phosphate to try and help our aging pipe systems and stuff like that from leaching, you know, metals from inside of the pipes. The phosphate prevents or deters some of that.
And obviously, you know, given what you've said before, those are EPA, within EPA standards.
Correct.
I mean, you can decide whether you agree with the EPA standards or not, but they are to the safety standards that are federally mandated.
Well, and since we are surface water, we are mandated by the EPA to add chlorine, because we are under the influence of surface water. If it was a well, no. We don't have to.
So surface water presents more challenges than well
yes.
water, because it's exposed.
It's inconsistent, you know. In a well, you usually have a pretty uniform, you know, it is what it is all the time. You know, our water changes, you know, daily. And also back to, you know, we disinfect, we have to disinfect, and then we have a minimum chlorine residual. And so disinfectant has made drinking water available at an amazing rate. So, and then with the EPA also, so what happens when we do disinfect our water? What does that happen to do? And so we've come up, there's disinfection byproducts, you know. Disinfection saved us for a long time, and now, well, let's find out what disinfection does. And so with the organics in the water that we already have naturally occurring, the dirt, the organics, we chlorinate it, and then over time, now we're in disinfection byproducts, which are trihalomethanes and haloacetic acids, is where we're at there. I know people probably don't understand that, but it's something that's happened to us over our time with our organics, our chlorination, and then the time in our system. Last year, when we had such a runoff year, you know, a lot of organics, that's where our organics come from. And then the water that sits there and the temperature, we are in a quarterly phase now that we're outside of the EPA standard of disinfection byproducts. The water's safe to drink. Is this something that we have to notify the public about, that their disinfection byproducts are in our water? And disinfection byproducts, like I say, over the life of our water system. So you see those, and where we sample for disinfection byproducts are on the end of our distribution system. So that's the longest time that it's had to be in contact with chlorine and in our system.
Every action has a reaction.
Correct, yeah, and that's back to where you say, you know, different places in town may taste something different. You know, the chlorine level on the west side of town is higher, and you probably taste more chlorine.
Why is that?
It's because we only inject chlorine into our drinking water as it leaves our water plant. And so by the end of our, we have to have a minimum amount by the time it reaches the end of our distribution system. So over time, chlorine that's free in our system that we smell has to be there. So it's higher as it comes into town, and then over time it gets used up and sits in tanks, and then that's what that's there for. So it dissipates, you know, as it does its job. And so for there to be chlorine at the other end of town, well, it's got to be a little bit higher to begin with to make it all the way across.
Such a complex and intricate system of different aspects that all have to kind of line up.
Correct. And also in our distribution system, you know, our flow and our movement of water throughout our distribution system is very important.
One thing that received some attention a few years ago was fluoride in water. And do we add fluoride in our water here in Buffalo?
We do not.
Okay. One of the things you described to me earlier about fluoride is that actually at the water treatment plant spot, at that position, it's a volatile and very hazardous to deal with. So you're grateful that
at the wrong levels, it's very harmful, and then that's somewhere where we would have to be involved. You know, with the there's a fine balance. That's a pretty heated conversation when it comes to fluoride. We do, our source water does have a small, minute amount of naturally occurring fluoride, so brush your teeth.
Yes, indeed. So the treatment plant, obviously, you know, we are running to EPA standards. It is as good as it can be right now. Is there room for improvement? Are there things that you hanker after, you wish that you had some extra tools and so on at your disposal that you would like to have as improvements?
I see us as we have a very good plan. With what we do and what we have to deal with, and we'll use the taste and odor as an example. It's a very expensive process to try and get that out of the water. We'd have to use activated charcoal, potassium permanganate. There's several chemicals out there. That being said, it's very expensive to do, but also in our minds, we're also adding another chemical within the water that we would have to deal with down the line. Is it too high? Is it too much? And that is a case where, you know, if something goes wrong within town, okay, that may contaminate the water even more. I used potassium permanganate as an example. If too much is added into the water, something goes wrong with the monitoring system or the chemical system, your water turns purple. It'll turn your clothes purple. You'll see purple. I do not think there are a lot of people in town that would really like to see purple clothes or purple water. So dealing with the taste and odor, do we like it? No. But I drink the water. I deal with it. I live in the middle of town. I have it as of right now. I do know it, but I still drink the water. I still shower. I still do my clothes.
It upsets us more than probably anybody else because we care so much and it looks on us, you know, and that's, I think, why we get eyes on us again. And in that case, it's good, you know, to understand, you know, how good our water is and what kind of source we have here and what kind of facility we have here. So, you know, it's back to the any news is good news, you know, as far as, you know, we're not trying to sell anything here, but any, you know, exposure that we get, you know, we're and it's good, you know, we can use that, you know, to help people understand, you know, our little stinky water systems, you know, the little spats that we get in the spring and the fall, you know, and the big picture of things. We're very fortunate to have the clean supply of drinking water that we have and a facility to take care of it.
Just might add to, you know, so to enhance the plant or work that we are connecting to, you know, the well system is obviously an enhancement to the plant. It's going to help the water system. So that's moving forward. We're also looking into upgrading our SCADA system, which helps us monitor everything. I mean, it's an older system, so it needs some upgrading. So we're moving forward on that. And then also we're adding some mixers to one of our larger tanks to help with the chlorine residual.
Yeah, disinfection byproduct. Yeah, it helps keep our water the fresher we can keep it and keep it moving. And, you know,
so it doesn't stratify in the tank so much, and you can put less chlorine and keep it mixed in. So, and those are all, that's all stuff that we're doing.
One issue that obviously comes to mind is just making sure that the system is working properly and you have multiple backups and alarm systems and so on, just to really make sure that the system is robust and resilient. But security is a big issue, and there is conversation about how, you know, we may be vulnerable, maybe less so in Johnson County than other places in the world, but how we are vulnerable to some kind of attack. What kind of security do you have here to make sure that our water even just is not contaminated by a prankster?
Well, we have a SCADA. Our SCADA is protected. Our company, you know, remote access is limited. You know, we go through, there's firewalls in place to do that. Our programming is, you know, protected. And, you know, it's something that, you know, the water industry, Terry and I were at conference 2 or 3 years ago, and that's already, you know, we've seen that across the U.S., and it's a big concern. You know, it's something we always try to, you know, we try to keep any sort of logins, you know, secure and within our system and change those things. And like I say, our SCADA system is, you know, we're constantly monitoring. We know when somebody enters places and we know when, you know, if somebody's there. So it's, you know, yeah, we'd like to assume it won't happen to us, but we're aware. We're very aware and try to be proactive, you know, in any sort of cyber, you know, security.
And gentlemen, what kind of a season is ideal water treatment plant season for you? What are the ideal conditions? What's a bluebird day for?
Winter.
Winter.
We love winter.
Yeah.
The water's clear and nobody's watering their yard.
If the temperature would be, I hate to say this, but minus 10 outside all the time and just basically winter, because that is when the water comes through the plant in its almost purest form. It's cold, it's pleasant to drink. We don't have to do hardly anything to it other than a little bit of coagulant and a little bit of chlorine, like we say, which we are mandated to do. But it's so minute that yeah, the water we drink in the winter is excellent.
And the cold temperatures actually cause all those contaminants to be laying on the bottom.
Yeah,
and
everything's just
kind
of dormant at that time, just kind of like everybody else. And it comes out, it's cold, we don't need any ice cubes, it's quiet, it's beautiful. We like winter. Some of you want to go south for the winter, but we ride it out pretty nice here at the water plant. It gives us time to do preventative things, you know, and prepare for our busy and noisy and crazy times.
Yes.
So we take advantage of that, too.
So just one question before we wrap up. Fire, you know, we use fire risk is a real issue and concern here. I mean, just last week we had in April, and we had a random fire. Fire marshals are saying that, and the fire chiefs are saying that it's a very dry season already. which is probably why we should be grateful that right now it's snowing, even though we had a beautiful 75-degree day just a couple of days ago, and we need that moisture. But in the event of a fire, what would the water treatment plant be doing?
We still have some safeguards, but if there was a forest fire around Tyhack, above Tyhack, everything, you know, up there where the ash would contaminate the water, we could hold for a little bit by pulling out of the ponds. We would have to shut our head gate down coming to the ponds so we didn't contaminate the ponds. With the well field going in, we have a better chance there of surviving something like that, because until that's, we can get out of a lot of it, but that's a lot of contaminants coming through the water. And that process would be twofold, threefold of what we actually deal with in the summertime.
Yeah, and this is something that's, you know, in Wyoming we've dealt with this. Sheridan's dealt with this. They've gone through this, you know, and it would be, you know, another one of those, okay, we're going to get a runoff, and that's basically, you know, during the forest fire, probably not so much, but then we may see that, you know, that taste and odor when the next time it rained, because it would, you know, and in the way the creek system works and the way, you know, the things flush through, you know, the creek system pretty fast, we you know, you might see one of those, you know, oh, my water kind of smells like. We can assure you that we can make your water safe to drink through that. And that's in our, you know, in our source water. One of our other jobs is, you know, the fire hydrants in town. That's hooked to our water system too, and the tanks, and knowing what the pressures are. And that's also a responsibility in having the water in our storage, that if that happened in town, that's something that we're responsible for the fire protection throughout town too. And pressures for, you know, the schools and their sprinkler systems and high pressure and how much pressure there is. So that's one of our duties too, is fire protection within our community.
And would you be providing water for firefighting as well?
And in town for sure. And then I've seen the helicopter dip out of, we've allowed the helicopters when there's things close to town to come, you know, dip out of those ponds. Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for this, what has been literally a deep dive into water and why it is the way it is here in Buffalo, Wyoming. I very much appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thank you. If anybody ever wants to know anything, get a hold of us. We're your water system.
Thank you. And thank you again for your time.